Hi, and welcome back to another segment of our community, Unsheltered. Brookings Core Response Executive Director Diana Cooper joins me again as we look at various issues impacting the members of our community who are struggling to make ends meet, struggling to find shelter, to hook up with needed services in both physical and mental health areas. Many of these folks are our neighbors, or people who were born and raised here. Many have been displaced by recent wildfires and affected by a pandemic that just won't quit. The past 18 months have been very hard on all of us, but some have suffered more than others. During this time, I've had a roof over my head, heat to keep me warm, hot water to shower, and enough food to eat. There are many living here that haven't had those basic needs met. What surprises me is how quick people are to judge others, often without any real understanding of their situations. So, hi, Diana. How are you doing this week?
Oh, you know, it's been an interesting week, but productive, I think, and educational in some sense. Yeah.
Well, that's actually pretty good, right? Interesting,
yeah.
Productive, and educational. So the interesting, I always try to remember that interesting, may you have an interesting day or an interesting year, is a Chinese curse.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah. So that whole kind of puts interesting
well,
in
no,
a whole
that, then that makes
light,
sense.
Right?
Then that's probably right.
Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, educational would come from that if you actually, you know, are kind of primed to
yes.
learn, right?
Yes, a lot going on, a lot of, you know, the whole week, just in general, but specifically about our work stuff, the whole week has been a lot of people talking, you know, community, city, county, just everybody. So it's been very interesting to hear all of the kind of talk coming up around
yeah.
all this.
And that's actually a really good thing, because mm-hmm. generally speaking, the first step is to actually talk about it so that
right.
people are acknowledging that it exists, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was thinking, we're recording this on June 13th, and it is still raining out there as I look. It's been raining for several days.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm really grateful for the added moisture. Because we need it, right? I mean,
yeah.
we're going into a drought. The rivers are at historic lows, which affects everything from fishing to, you know, having decent drinking water. But this rain must be having negative effects on our citizens who are without shelter. What is
yeah.
that happening?
Well, it's not too bad right now. And it isn't, you know, it's not bad when, you know, rains for a few days or something like that. When it's weeks on end in the early spring, you know, when it gets really rainy, or in the fall or in the winter, it can get cold and it can just kind of get miserable. Although I will say anytime you're outdoors and it's raining, it sucks because it's hard to stay dry. And even if it's just for a day, you know, it's hard to stay dry. It's hard to keep your stuff dry. And so It kind of sucks, but in another sense, I remember when we were, I think there was probably a 9-month stretch where we were in a tent or in our van off and on, and because there's been several times where we've kind of went without housing in different settings, but there was a period of time where we were in a tent for a while, and with kids, it's different, you know. With kids, it's hard to be in a tent when it's raining and they want to be up and running around, but then it's muddy and you can't really just do laundry. So it's kind of a whole thing. But there is also some sense of people kind of settle out for, you know, when it's rainy for a few days, people kind of settle down for a few days. They sort of, everybody retreats to their area and whatnot. But it can affect mood. You know, I was just talking to a gentleman. I saw him yesterday out and about, and He was just trying to find a space to be and be dry and whatnot, and I just kind of gave him some general areas where he might be able to just chill for a while and be out of the weather. So, yeah, I mean, it sucks. Sucks to be out in it.
Well, it affects my mood just being in the house looking out at it, knowing mm-hmm. that, you know, that I can't go out and play in my yard and, you know, I can't go out and sit in the sun because there isn't any sun right now, you know.
Right.
But how do they get dry? How do they, like, so you're out in the rainstorm and you're wet, and how do you get dry?
I mean, sometimes you don't. Sometimes
I can't
you just,
imagine what that yeah, must feel like.
You know, I like, so I grew up here, you know, Matt and I grew up here and experienced our fair share of rain. And, you know, when you're growing up here, there's no choice but to get out in it because you don't want to be stuck at home. And so I remember as teenagers walking around all the time in the rain and whatnot. But, you know, then you have a place to go and sort of change into some dry. It's mostly your feet. That's the real bother. You know, mm-hmm. having wet feet all day is really uncomfortable and can also cause some bacterial issues and other things as well. But for the most part, it's just uncomfortable. But yeah, they probably don't really get dry much during the rainy times.
And there's an amazing amount that you can endure as a child and a teenager that when you get into your later years, you just freaking can't.
Yeah.
Just can't, you know?
I don't enjoy going out in the weather as much as I used to when Matt and I mm-hmm. were teenagers and, you know, running around and
yep.
just whatnot. So, yeah, it's, I notice now that I'm getting older, even though, you know, I like to think I'm still young.
You're still a spring chicken, yes.
I don't enjoy it as much. So Matt was just saying the other day, we haven't gone walking in the rain in a while. And I thought, I don't know that I really want to.
Exactly. That might have been fun 10 years ago, but yeah, not so much.
And I have a choice today. And so.
That's right.
So, you know, it's not too bad right now, honestly. It does affect the mood. And, you know, I know that there are people struggling in general. And so when you're struggling and feeling isolated, the rain, you know, like I said, everybody sort of settles to their area. So it can cause a little bit of isolation and
yep.
and just discomfort and overall doesn't really motivate you to do much. Yeah. Certainly not filling out an application in the rain.
Oh, no. With everything kind of dripping. Yeah, that wouldn't work well. Yeah, right. I was talking to my husband the other day, and he is pretty disabled at this point. And I was saying to him, you know, imagine how it would be if you felt the way you feel, you know, and are only as mobile as you are right now, which is basically not much.
Right.
Imagine how it would feel if you had to look for a new place to sleep every day. That, you know, you had to, when the cops came by and rousted you, you had to somehow get to your feet and somehow shuffle off somewhere else. I mean, imagine how that would feel. And, you know, I think if each one of us kind of applied that to our own lives, not trying to say, oh, well, that would never happen to me, but actually just imagine that it did happen. Like it just mm-hmm. did. Like one morning you woke up and you were disabled and homeless. How would it feel? How would it feel? I guess I keep hoping that, you know, if those of us who live fairly privileged lives in that we have things surrounding us, creature comforts, if we start to imagine what it must feel like to be without those comforts.
Yeah, I've been thinking about this the last several weeks and really since kind of the conversation has been picked up more at the city level and, because it's not actually, you know, we did the recording last week and I saw that one aired pretty quickly and we didn't know what the council was going to be like and we didn't know what that meeting was going to be like. And, you know, part of the reason why I say this last week has been educational is because I really did not feel, so I'm going to go through this and then I'll backtrack a little bit. But I really did not feel that this was council versus St. Timothy's. This really much, you know, this really was very much community members seeing, hearing, experiencing things they don't like, and trying to find the source of that. And I can see they're frustrated. I can see, well, you know, I'm down there all the time. I know what's going on down there. And so I can imagine what they see, what they hear, and you know, how they feel about that. You know, they express pretty well how they feel about that. And so coming down to counsel and submitting those concerns, you know, I don't have any ill will towards the city, towards the community members that spoke or anything like that, because I do understand where everybody's coming from. But I think that there's a couple of things that I do think probably should be clarified or should be, you know, included in the conversation. And one of those is that we're not, you know, obviously I said this at council, we're not anchoring people to this place. People are coming here of their own free will. A lot of the people are from here. But a lot of what I learned too was that there's a huge disconnect between just person to person. So we tend to, you know, when we have someone in our family who commits a crime, it's so much easier to overlook that because we understand that. We understand the circumstances around what happened. And I'm not saying it's easier to overlook it and say like, oh, well, they didn't, because most of us would say, okay, they did, but I also want to include this as evidence. And we don't give that same benefit to people we don't know, whether they're homeless or not. We just don't. And so I actually don't feel that it's a, I don't feel that it's a city against the homeless at this right sitting here right now. I don't feel like it's a community members against the homeless. I think it is community members and city against unknown. It is something that they, because you can't be against the homeless. There's no such thing as like the homeless. There's people, all different kinds of people, and some of them have housing and some of them don't, and some of them share difficulties and some of them don't. I mean, it would be so hard to group together all the people who don't have housing because they're not, some of them don't even know each other.
Right.
You know, they don't all hang out. There's not the homeless. No. You know, I mean,
it's similar to doing stuff like, you know, grouping everybody by race, all the blacks or by religion,
they don't know all the Catholics.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. You're going to say that all the Catholics are bad because some of the priests molested children.
Right.
No. Right.
And homelessness is a weird category because it's one of the few categories that we don't allow people to put themselves in. We put them in that category. And so it's actually not even comparable to any of those other categories.
Right.
Because it's a we're saying you're homeless, this is your category. And they're saying I'm not homeless. You know, some of them don't consider themselves homeless. You know, it's just a weird sort of phenomenon, but I think what came out of that council meeting was I understood even better just sort of where the disconnect is. And I think it's just in understanding, you know, when you don't know something, it's easy to be afraid of that. And to be honest, you know, we have some people with some very, very serious mental health concerns in our town right now. And that is not anybody's fault. That's just sort of how it is. You know, there's a lot of things that have shut down over the last year and a half, and not everything's gotten going again. So,
and really lucky for our town, not all of the seriously mental health issues are unhoused. A lot of them have homes. So they can take their mental issues and they can take them home. And nobody is affected by that.
And we're seeing a lot of, well, we're hearing a lot of families right now. And when I say a lot, obviously we're not dealing in hundreds of people, but, you know, we're hearing some common themes that we haven't necessarily heard in this same way before or in the same amount. So we're hearing a lot of family members who are trying to assist and take care of family members with mental health issues or physical health issues and aren't finding any assistance and are, you know, frankly getting burnt out. And so the situation can be 10 times worse when you have, you know, we know that a lot of people who don't have housing, a lot of people who suffer from substance use disorder or mental health disorders tend to not have a lot of really good family support. And it's not necessarily because they did something wrong. It could be because that family and that support system didn't feel supported itself and was unable to kind of hold that energy up. And so it doesn't necessarily mean like that person did something wrong and so they deserved to be away from their family. It could be a myriad of reasons. It could be that family itself struggles with addiction or mental health and is unable to support. So, but we do have a lot of people kind of reaching out because they're, you know, trying to take care of someone who has some sort of disability and are struggling. And so, you know, in that, a couple people have kind of had to fend for themselves a little bit. And so, you know, sometimes the family is just not able to do it at all and they end up on the street. So there are people in housing suffering from some pretty serious mental health disorders. And I really commend all the families right now who are doing the best that they can to, weather it.
Particularly in the midst of a pandemic that still hasn't let go. I mean, that's the reality. We're still not out of it. And with the variants that are starting to make themselves well known, that are much more contagious, it's a little bit, you know, I mean, I feel pretty safe because I've been vaccinated and I mostly hang out with vaccinated people if I hang out anywhere. But, you know, people who have not had the vaccinations yet, you add a virus variant that is even more contagious. Even if it doesn't make you sicker, it still makes you sick. You know, it's like,
Yeah, I just saw, I think, in China that they're having another outbreak and it's kind of catching faster. This variant is catching faster. So, yeah, I mean, it certainly, especially in our area where we didn't see such high numbers, it doesn't always feel like we're still in the middle of a pandemic, but we still are. Here we are still doing Zoom, you know?
I know. And we had one case. I looked at the numbers. I think I looked at the numbers this afternoon, and we had another case in Curry today.
Oh, we did?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, you know, and it's not every day that we have a case, but some days we have three cases, and other days we have one. And, you know, and then we'll maybe skip a day or, you know. And people that I've talked to several people who have had the virus, and they were lucky that they only had a mild case and, you know, didn't have any after effects. There's this whole kind of thought that, you know, if you've had the virus, now you're immune and you don't need to get vaccinated, which, you know, it just couldn't be farther from the truth. Especially if you've had a mild case, the likelihood of your immune system, you know, being now strengthened to be able to repulse it is not good. I mean, it's just, they don't know how long that inoculation is going to last. And I mean, it's just, it's not really worth, I don't think it's worth, you know, gambling your life on.
No,
but,
no.
You know.
I mean, especially, whatever. You know, your parents' or grandparents' lives. I mean, that's
exactly.
And just the community in general. We don't want to be shut down anymore. We don't want to be going through this anymore. And
want to be done.
I told you that, you know, we got it last year. And so we didn't. We still got the vaccine this year. In fact, my daughter just went and got her second Pfizer shot yesterday. And so she's kind of chilling in the living room today. Yeah. She's fine. I think she's milking it, but
that's all right.
but you know, we did get sick last year, and it was the sickest we've ever. I mean, there's never been a time where I've voluntarily taken my kids out of school for 2 weeks. Just this was right before school shut down and everything, of course. But yeah, so we got sick, and we got the vaccine, and I did have a negative reaction to the vaccine for several days, but not even close to being sick. Didn't even touch it.
And I just don't even want to. I mean, why would you? Why would you? Why would you want to do that dance with that virus? I wouldn't want to do
we've
that.
We've seen enough this year.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I've so had enough. So I find that very interesting what you're saying about that it's a lack of understanding. And I think you're absolutely right. And I think that it is about the unknown. Because if there were people who were at St. Timothy's on a regular basis that I was on a first name basis with, I would feel differently. I know I would. Mm-hmm. I would be just,
It's interesting because, there's so many, it's so nuanced and there's so many different, sides to this coin, it seems like, but, there's no like straight answer. So we can talk about, it's almost like these different groups that sort of, have you ever seen the Venn diagrams that sort of overlap somewhat? Okay. Yep. So, with one of the questions, in communities or in areas where there's, people who are congregating, who don't have housing, are those more dangerous areas? Like that's a general question that I feel like the community across from St. Tim's, I feel like they think they know the answer to that.
Right.
And, yes, but yes, there can be a lot more crime that happens, but why, know, and so it's not person on person crime for the most part. We do see some of that, but that has more to do with mental health issues and, obviously we're doing the best we can there, but person on person crime, not so much, theft and things like this, but again, this is coming from people who don't necessarily have all their needs met, and everybody responds differently to that. Some people steal. And so if you took the entirety of the community that we have here in Brookings and you said, okay, all the people without housing and how many of those people steal to get their needs met, and then you took the entire population of Brookings that had housing and you took away their housing, it's probably a fairly similar percentage that would steal to get their needs met.
Yeah.
And so it's a really weird kind of chicken and egg situation. And obviously, since St. Tim's is the only space that people can hang out, there's a lot, everybody congregates there who, and since we do have a lot of people right now who have mental health issues, they congregate together and they tend to trigger each other. And so we get a lot of situations and we contact law enforcement. We contacted law enforcement last week and within an hour that person was back and there's nothing we can do about that. Mm-hmm. When the jail won't take someone, when the Oregon State Hospital won't take someone, even if it's clear and we're saying it's clear that this person needs to be, they need help. They need to get some serious professional help that we can't give them. When they're released within a half an hour or 45 minutes, we what are we going to do? So
exactly.
That's not us for sure.
No, is the system that's broken.
Right.
That's the system.
But when you're sitting across the street or you're in another part of the neighborhood and you're watching, listening to the scanner or watching the talk that's going on, or like the neighbors that are across the street watching, if you don't know what's going on over there, if you don't know the, 75% of the people that were, well, it's even more than that, I think. There's probably 90% of the people we're working with that are just super regular folks, like all of us. Probably about 90% of the rest of us are super regular folks, if that's the word.
Although there's always that 10%, right?
Yeah, and it's like that with everything. There's always some people, because it doesn't have anything to do with the color of their skin or their housing status or anything. It's just people. Yep. It's just people are people, and sometimes some of us are a little more out there than others. And
yes.
But when you're sitting there across the street and you don't know them and you don't know the stories going on, you don't see what's happening inside the building. They didn't even know we were a part of Property Watch. The neighbors didn't. So, they don't know a lot about what's going on. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to point any fingers at that because there's so many reasons why that communication isn't happening the way it should. But because that's going on, you know, if you're sitting across the street and all you're seeing is the craziness at that, you know, you're busy trying to live your life and you come out every time there's craziness, that's what you're most,
right?
You know, you're interacting most with that craziness that's kind of happening.
Right.
And right. Where else would you put it besides the one place, you know, you would put it on the place that seems to be causing the issue. But really when you, like, because we're there and we're inside, you know, we can tell you that it's not, it has less to do with us and more to do with outside systems that aren't dealing with the major issues. Because most of what we deal with on a normal day is just signing people up for insurance and signing people up for doctors and stuff. You know, lately we've been stepping in on a lot of mental health crisis and, I mean, surprisingly, very little substance use. Most of it has just been mental health crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
it's kind
that
of interesting to me that we know that what we have in this community, we know that we don't have sufficient mental health institutions or any kind of solutions, or we don't have anywhere near sufficiency for that.
Right.
We also know that we don't have anywhere near sufficiency for affordable housing. I mean, we know these things. We've known them for probably decades, certainly for the last decade. We know these things. We know that they are problems. We know what the effects are of those things. And yet we don't address it. As a community, we don't address it. What we do instead is we hire more police officers.
Mm.
Now, I don't have anything against police officers. I'm always really happy if I'm in danger to call a police officer. Absolutely. However, how many police officers do 6,500 people need? How many do we absolutely need? And isn't it possible that if 50% of the call-outs are homeless related, which is probably more like mental health related, then wouldn't it make sense to take two police positions and turn them into mental health positions so that that 50% of the calls didn't get filtered to the cops?
Yeah, because and again, I'm also very grateful for our law enforcement here. And there's not a single officer that, you know, that I interact with that I think is not doing a great job. So much so that, you know, on Friday even, you know, I kind of came up on a situation that was pretty intense and was able to talk with the law enforcement and, you know, they were able to talk with the people that the situation was happening with who were unsheltered. And, you know, we were all able to sort of resolve it. And I was able to hang out after and kind of do some networking with them. And, you know, law enforcement, I think here appreciates any extra effort done by the organizations and by community to kind of help resolve some of the issues that is not really in their tool belt to do.
No, they don't have the training. They don't have the training for it. They're not mental health professionals. They're not.
It's not even that they don't have the training, because they have a lot of different types of training, but they wouldn't, the training needed to, you know, that's involved in helping people with long-term goals is not really on the minds or focus of a city or a law enforcement agency or something like that.
Right.
You know, I would say, obviously, our community resource officer thinks about it more often than the rest do, because he interacts with those of us who do long-term goals and care. But, you know, it's not typically in the repertoire for most of the police officers. And so it's not like saying we think the carpenter's doing a terrible job on the plumbing. It's like saying, can we just hire a plumber? Because... at this point, it seems like that's sort of what we need. So
it just seems so plain to me. I mean, I don't know how we keep not taking action It's like, how many times do we have to hear and come to the conclusion that the problem is we don't have enough resources in the community. We don't have affordable housing. We don't have good mental health. I mean, what? So we've heard it and heard it and heard it, and we all know it. And why aren't we doing something? Why aren't we taking action?
And in the meantime of taking the action, because there is some, you know, obviously we know mental health is coming. You know, there's a lot going on with that. We don't know all of what yet. And I think that probably the last conversations have been, you know, over a couple weeks ago with the county and sending it back to the state and all that. So we know a lot's going on.
Right.
But I don't know. I think that it, you know, we have mental health coming. I think that the city is looking at mental health, although I don't know necessarily what they're doing with that or how that's going to go. But in the meantime, let's not skewer what little bit that we have, because so we're not here like providing a bunch of handouts to people. And that's, I mean, obviously we do give out items. We give out hygiene items. We allow people to take showers. We hand out meals and things like that. But, you know, we're not handing out cash and we're not handing out, anything
else, really.
You're not giving
them automobiles or televisions or radios,
right?
Or, I mean, come on. You're
right,
giving them soap.
But what's most important about it is, and this is really, I think, the kind of the crux of what we do, is connecting them with the already, you know, with the resources, you know, all of the taxes that we pay here, all of the taxes we pay on a county level and a state level, even on the federal level, and all of these benefits that come down the pike. We want our people to be able to access these resources that we're paying taxes for.
Yeah.
And so, because the money's there, you know, if we don't use it, it's going to go to some other county, some other state, some other area. And that's sort of the way it works. You know, with HUD, if you don't do the count, you don't show the numbers, you don't get as much of the funding. And so why wouldn't we want to tap into that funding locally? And if the community could hear this, we need those larger anchor organizations like ORCA and like the CCOs, the coordinated care organizations that handle Medicaid dollars, and with larger funders and larger foundations, we want them to hear what's going on down here. We want them to see our numbers. We want them to see the issues that we're having, not see in some, like, you know, hair on fire kind of way, but we want to be connecting people with these resources so that those numbers are there. You know, when there's so much that happens when you neglect people's services, because the issue doesn't go away. The issue of homelessness is going to be around for as long as mankind is around. And so when we don't deal with that as a community, and by community, I mean, you know, Brookings Harbor area-ish.
Right.
So when we don't deal with that, we stop connecting people to services. It looks on the organizational level as though there's less need.
Right.
And really, it's just people going without. You know, we have, when Michelle and I first started, well, when I first started last year, there were so many people without health insurance. And I've never seen this. I've worked in Jackson County with large populations of people who didn't have housing and people who were on the cusp of, you know, not having housing. And I've never seen an area with this many people who didn't have basic things like phones, ID, stuff like that. And so the people are still going to be here. And it's going to be a drain on our resources, and we're going to be walking around as taxpayers going, why is this happening? Why are we paying such high taxes? Why are there so many police? So it's not going to make anything better by pushing this to the side. It's going to make it worse, and we're not going to know why. And so it's better to get this out in the open and say, admit that we have a problem and put the resources towards it.
The resources that exist already.
Right.
That
right.
We just have to reach out and say, we need.
Right. And let us do our job connecting people to these benefits that we're all paying for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
It's not like it's going to raise my taxes to have these people reach out and get right. those benefits. We're already paying them. We're already right. paying for
that
them.
Means
yeah.
every person that we connect to Oregon Health Plan is a hospital bill, a doctor's bill paid by the state.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that money comes here.
Yes.
You know, so yes. In lieu of that, we have people who rack up thousands of dollars in hospital bill charges who qualify for insurance, who qualify for 100% coverage because they're either, you know, severely disabled or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe we had a gentleman who was 66 and qualified for Medicare and, you know, like was due to get $1,800 a month in Social Security benefits and just didn't have them. And when I connected with this person, it was like, they, you know, he didn't have a phone. He didn't have an ID. Jeez. He didn't have a bank. He qualified for his retirement benefits for over a year. And I was like, why don't you have income? And, you know, he was just like, I don't know. I'm not sure. I didn't know what to do. And, you know, this is his money. This is his money he's earned over his entire life. And he's just, you know, he's older and he doesn't quite understand how the systems
right.
work and
right.
was too afraid to reach out. So what we're doing every time we connect someone to their income, every time we connect them to health insurance or whatever the resource is, that is money coming into our area that we're already paying these taxes for. We're already spending this money on as a country, as a state, mm-hmm, as a county, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and as a city. So
yep.
The more people like us that we have out there connecting people to resources, the quicker we'll be able to help get people stabilized. And, you know, having 9 hours a week at St. Tim's, it's not enough. But losing that, you know, I can't even...
yeah.
I can't even begin to express what it would be like to lose having a space because we actually need more.
And I think if we remember that, you know, that old adage that you're only as strong as your weakest link is true. It's true. There's a reason why that's an old adage. You know, you look at your community, you want a strong community. Your community is not going to be strong if you've got people who are falling through the safety nets.
And it's not, you know, obviously we look at this and we're like, it's a terrible shame because people are suffering and dying before their time and whatnot. But take all that out of it even, and just people falling through the cracks and whatnot. Take the emotion off of the table, and you have people who are, I mean, truly, if you just look at it from a financial point of view and mm-hmm. you're like, I don't want them here, I don't care what they feel or how they think, mm-hmm. That's a whole other story. But they're draining the resources in a different angle. They're not costing the state $200 a month in food stamps. They're costing the county and the hospital thousands of dollars in medical bills because they're not eating well. And right. so it's not about a bleeding heart. It's not about these people, you know, I think the kind of passive aggressive rhetoric on the other side, you know, is that they think all of us over here who are helping are like, you know, these people did nothing wrong and they just need food and all that. That's not what we're not saying any of that whether that's true or not. That's not what we're saying. You know, we're just saying that, hey, we've got to bring more resources into our community to help people. That's what they're there for. So it's
and the reality is that if you can bring people up, okay, the
right.
people who are suffering and are in need and, you know, are slipping through the cracks, if you can bring them up so that they have a chance at being not only a functioning but a productive member of the community, which can happen. It's not like that is so far beyond the pale that you can't even think about it.
No, that's the norm.
It happens all the time, right?
That is the standard, because all of us are trying to get back to homeostasis, and really that just means not being stressed out all the time.
Yes. So if you can bring those people back into productive member of society, productive member of community, then the whole community benefits, because whatever talent they have that hasn't been utilized because they've been not fully in their right minds or whatever, suddenly can be used. I mean, what if they were a wonderful musician and all they needed was a roof over their head, you know, to make beautiful music? I mean, come on.
I think I told you that one of the guys we have was a backup guitar player for the Rolling Stones. Did I tell you?
Yes.
And I said, so did you get to play all the time? He said, no, the Rolling Stones don't need a backup player. I never got to play. And so that was the funniest thing ever.
But you know he had to be good, right?
Oh,
you don't get to be a backup player for the Rolling Stones without being good, for heaven's sake.
And he was an artist. And I asked him, we used to do our art studio down at St. Tim's, and we'll probably do that again now that it's getting sunny. But I said, oh, well, that's really cool. Do you want to come sit down and paint with us? And he was like, nope, I promised, you know, years ago that nobody would ever get another one of my paintings. And I was like, okay. Wow. he was like, nope, I'm never painting for anyone again. And so we'll never know. We'll never see that.
Exactly.
But yeah, there are interesting people in the world, and, you know, my corner isn't any different.
No.
That's really all it is. It's just another corner of the world, and one where we probably should be sending some energy,
in my opinion. I saw a post on Facebook, I think it was this morning, actually, and it was about this woman who is now in her 40s. But she had spent the majority of her life in really bad situations. Her childhood was spent with a drug addict mom, abusive husbands that came and went, her mother's husbands, and then she married into an abusive relationship, and there were drugs and addiction was involved. And it was just, I mean, you know, you're reading down this list of what her life looked like for, you know, 25 years or something, right? And it's just one thing after another. And, you know, and then there's a picture of her that was it was her mugshot when she was arrested for the last time. And she was, you know, clearly mentally just out to lunch. She looked horrible. She clearly was, you know, addicted.
I can imagine.
just an awful picture, right? With nothing but despair. I mean, that was the face of despair. And right next to it was a picture of her now. And she has just graduated Washington University, and she is working, and I can't remember what her job is now, but she's extremely productive. She has helped so many people. She was serving at a men's shelter for a long time. And it's just like you look at those two pictures and go, wow, okay, right? So
you know,
on this hand is like somebody that you would and most often do throw away, right? Mm-hmm. Not a worthwhile person to try to save. And indeed, she'd been in jail. She'd been in prison. I mean, she had had a rough life.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was she finally hit bottom and went to prison. And so in prison, she had a roof over her head. She had food. She had structure. She had a program she could work. She had a way to see that there was actually a path out of where she was.
Yeah, I So this is the 13th. So 2 days ago. So it would have been Friday. Friday, I got, you know, my 8 years clean. And yep.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. It's weird because it doesn't seem like it's been 8 years. But then sometimes it feels like it's been forever. And yes. But, you know, I clearly, whenever I hear stories or I see those pictures, those before and after, part of me thinks I'm so glad that I didn't have Facebook back then and I didn't like have I never took pictures. So there are very few photos of me during any of my drug use. And mm-hmm. And they're not photos that you can really see clearly anyway. So mm-hmm. very grateful for that to a certain extent. I, you know, Candace, if you'd have seen me 8 years ago, you know, let's say 8 years and a week ago, because mm-hmm. I was mm-hmm. in Brookings, I mean, just maybe a week before I went to treatment, we were in Brookings for a couple of weeks. And with all four of the kids. And if you had seen me then, yeah. I mean, you'd have crossed the street probably, especially Matt. You know, Matt looked pretty haggard and we didn't look great. I think I managed well enough to not be noticeable. You know, we didn't use meth, so there wasn't the serious signs and symptoms of drug use. But after a while of using heroin and stuff, you start to get a look anyway.
Wears you down. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It really does a number on your body. So you start looking pretty, older than you are. But, you know, so when I see those pictures, I think about that too, about like kind of how people must have seen me back then. And it's always amazing when you see those before and after photos of someone that you know, but you didn't know when they were using or something, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would think if someone hadn't ever used before and they saw a photo of maybe one of their friends methed out 10 years ago. Yeah, it's pretty shocking.
It is shocking.
But what's more shocking is kind of the personality difference more so than the visual. Mm-hmm. The visual is a lot for people, I think, but the personality difference, you know, me then versus me now. And I wasn't, wasn't like sneaky or do anything like that. Because again, I think there's a stereotype on people who use drugs too. And I didn't. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't, mm-hmm. I first of all, I never bought drugs. And so I didn't spend all my money on any of that. I paid my bills and I did all of that.
Right.
There's just a million different types of people. And
there are
some of us end up using drugs.
In every circumstance, there are a million different kinds of people, a million different kinds of ways of doing it.
I know. I wish we could just keep saying that. Maybe if we just spend a whole hour saying that, then
there are a million different kinds. Oh,
we're all, we're all just people, man.
Well, we are. Yeah. We are. And there, you know, to try and assign similarities based on, I don't know, drug use or color of hair or,
it's you know, it's offensive when we put people into those categories, especially if we don't know them. You know, if I walked up to just any guy and was like, you must be a chauvinist or something, you know, like whatever I think a guy is like, it'd probably be kind of offensive if he didn't know me.
Well,
so could you imagine just like looking at someone who you know doesn't have housing and just being like, you probably use drugs, right?
Yeah,
it's offensive to them.
Yeah, I would think so.
Highly, especially
considering that they are working as hard as they know how to not be without housing, right? They're doing everything they know how to do.
You know who accuses them of using more than the neighbors is themselves. They're constantly like, so-and-so must be using because they're freaking out. And, you know, we can't tell people like, that person has a mental health disorder. So we just, we're just talking to them about their behavior or how they feel or what's going on. But it is really interesting because there are some of them that have relapsed or went mm-hmm. even farther into what they were doing. But, you know, for the most part, it's what you're seeing that's sort of the bigger issues are mental health disorders. But But yeah, there are a lot who will kind of be like, they don't all know each other, you know, just like all of us. They don't all mm-hmm. like each other. They don't. It's well, just a space.
They're
it's
just people.
A space where, yeah. Yes. That's just the only space they can go get a shower. So
exactly.
Sometimes, and you can tell, you know, they'll just, some people, they'll just come in, eyes down, get in the shower and leave. They don't mm-hmm. want to interact with anyone.
Right.
And they do. They'll be like, you know, why is everybody here on drugs sometimes? You know, we'll hear that from one or two of them. And it's, it's yeah. always the ones that aren't using that yeah. are the ones causing some of the issues.
Yeah,
so.
That's funny. Well, you know, I was also kind of taken aback by something that Counselor Alcorn said about that he was very concerned that some of the citizens of the city were afraid in their own homes, mm-hmm. and that was something that really, really worried him and concerned him, that any of his citizens would be afraid. Absolutely,
right.
absolutely. But I have a question.
Yes,
because,
of course.
Because are the people who don't have homes less afraid?
No.
I would think they'd be even more afraid.
No.
And why yeah. aren't we concerned about their fear?
I think that we've not maybe brought that forward in the same way. And so mm-hmm. This is me not just trying to give the benefit of the doubt to Councilor mm-hmm. Schreiber or the rest of the council, but actually mm-hmm. trying to understand like where they're coming from when they're talking about this. And I think that, you know, if we had community members who didn't have housing, who were coming forward to city council with all of these concerns, there might be a little bit of a different conversation happening. Maybe. There might mm-hmm. not. It
right,
is possible
right.
that it still wouldn't hold a candle to, you know, community members who do have housing, but right. I think it would at least add something to it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's probably not going to happen in that way. So, you know, people who are at the lower end of the income scale, just kind of the lower end of any kind of economic scale, are usually the last ones to, I mean, we'll take a lot. We'll take a lot of abuse before we, you know, well, look at the Amazon workers right now are struggling to form a union and mm-hmm. Really take a lot of heat from kind of all sides, people who don't understand the issue going on mm-hmm. or people who don't want them to do that. Obviously, that's a little bit off the topic, but you know what I mean? Like people.
No, but it's not. It's your rights. It's people who are
right.
who are so, looking to improve their.
It's hard to yeah. come forward when you
of
are
course.
Coming from a place where you're lacking, whether mm-hmm. it's resources or whatnot. It's hard to come forward because, first of all, you don't have the resources to stand yourself up while you're trying to
right.
fight that fight.
Right.
And it's also very intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, you're focused on surviving. You're not really focused on changing the world.
That's right.
That's sort of where advocates come into play and why it's so important for us to keep talking. I know that they would love for people, you know, who didn't have housing to come in and speak on their own behalf. And maybe that's what they're waiting for. But that's just not the reality of how things normally work. So, you know, I think that it's sort of incumbent upon us who are advocates and community members who maybe do understand to kind of get up and speak as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. I agree.
Yeah.
Because there is a, you know, even those of us who are used to being in the system or are, mm-hmm. are used to speaking in public or are used to speaking truth to power, you know, all of those things. Even us, when we stand up to speak to city council, start to shake.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
There is a power.
I do every time.
Because there's a power imbalance. That's mm-hmm. the way it is. We are powerless. They are powerful. And
right.
that is, you know, underscored by the fact that they sit up on top of that dais.
And I hope that they take
chairs.
That into account. I wonder because yeah. it certainly feels when we're speaking sometimes, you know, there's been a twice that I can remember, although I think that they might argue with this. There's been twice that I can remember where I got, you know, I was I had an emotional speech or talk or a comment or whatever. And but for the rest of, you know, the last year plus that I've been going, it's just been very practical, logical kind of conversation. But there have been some times where I've spoken out and been very upset. And I hope that they understand that regardless of how upset I am down there, they still have power and much more power than I do. And it would be very, not just gracious, but it would be very smart of them to take that in stride. And I think that, I think for the most part, they know that. I mean, that sort of comes with the territory of being on the council and being in that position. So I hope.
I would like to think that. I think certainly Jake understood that. But I'm not sure that any of the current council does. I mean, just watching the mayor cut Michelle off at the workshop and not allow her to read her letter was, I mean, that for me underscored the power, because
it did because
there was no reason why she should not have been able to read her letter.
And you know, Mayor Hedenskog's been there the longest, and so when I say that I hope that they understand that, I would have put more on him, I think, because he's been there so long. But it certainly raises question.
It wasn't a good look, as it were. Yeah. So Diana, I hate to call your attention
to the. I'm not looking at it. I just forget it. I'm just going to keep talking. What's he going to do?
He would cut us off, is what he would do, and then suddenly this interview would be over.
It'd be a weird ending.
It would be so weird. But
well,
we're not going to, you know, tempt fate.
I'll then give you this last little. I kind of wanted to sort of give this information out that you know, we're at like 2 minutes left. Okay, so with all that's going on. And really, with everything that's been going on the last 7 months, kind of with the council and that we know of, a lot of the people down at St. Tim's don't actually know a lot about what's going on at City Hall. So we've kind of been trying to talk to them a lot more about it. Some of them are getting an idea. But a couple of them have come forward the other day and said they want to put together like a committee with us so that they could group, you know, they could sort of form a group to represent themselves. And so we're actually hoping this week to kind of put together a first meeting.
Then that's what we're going to be talking about next week, because that's a huge step.
And this is them of their own volition. Like I said, we don't, you know, we don't like badger them about what's going on down there. They've got enough to worry about.
Yep, exactly. Good. All right. Now we know what we're going to talk about next week. And with any luck, we'll even get Father Bernie to come on.
I know, that'll be great.
Too. Yeah, that would be really great. So, you know, again, it was a great conversation, Diana, and thank you. There's so much systemic inequality, one hardly knows which front to choose to address. But I want to, you know, really thank you and your team for getting up every day and rejoining the battle, because it's you guys that are making the difference, and you can only do what you can to make things better for the underprivileged and the underserved. So just know that your efforts are seen and appreciated.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. If you can help, check out their Facebook page, Brookings Core Response. The more people put their shoulder to the wheel, the easier the work becomes for all of us. So we'll see you next week. This is Candace Michelle for our community.